Amen. Take a seat. You guys doing good today? You're looking good. My name's Mike, I'm one of the pastors. I'm excited to be here this morning. It's going to be a good morning. It's going to be a good week. It's a holiday. Time off work, time off school. I think probably for a whole lot of people around our country, this is second only to Christmas on the list of our favorite holidays, right? Just like how many of you guys, show hands, how many of you are pumped for this week? Yeah, it's Black Friday week, baby. There's not another week like this all year. The best part is that Black Friday Eve, we stuff ourselves with enough calories to shop for 20 hours straight. It's amazing. I want to kick off Black Friday week by finishing up this Beyond Me series that we've been in for the last few weeks. Next week, we're kicking off a brand new series, a Christmas series, called The Thrill of Hope. And if you're someone who feels like you could use some hope in a hope-starved world, you're not going to want to miss it. If you know someone who could use some hope, invite them to come with you. But Beyond Me, for the last month, we've been taking a look at what God has to say about how we can live the lives of impact and purpose that we were created for, even in the middle of a world that constantly invites us to settle for something less. We've taken a look at the fact that when we realize how incredibly God loves us and how generously He provides for us, it sets us free to create a better future for all the people around us that our lives are crashing into, to write a better story for a broken world. And as we close the series, I kind of want to bring that full circle and take a look at something I think is foundational to making that happen. But it's a mindset and it's a practice that's really difficult when you're surrounded by the culture we are surrounded by. This morning, we're going to dig into what God has to say about gratitude. Because I am convinced that in order for us to live lives that echo beyond ourselves, we have to have a lens and a lifestyle of gratitude. But it's really hard. Because we're bombarded from an early age with the message that to make our lives count, we have to accumulate more stuff and more success. With this message that to be satisfied, we have to get more and cling tightly to everything we've got. But every one of us who's ever believed that lie for any amount of time knows that there's just something totally empty about it. So what do we do? Well, it's not an accident that we're talking about gratitude on Thanksgiving week. This week where we set aside a day just to be thankful for everything we've got, which, by the way, is an incredibly healthy thing to do. Because for all of us, when we zoom out from the problems and the frustrations that are right in front of us, we have a whole lot to be thankful for. Certainly more than the pilgrims who invented this holiday. I've been thinking about that this week, like what I have to be thankful for versus what they have to be thankful for, and I realized, number one, they didn't even have football. So they had to spend the whole day talking to their extended family, and So we have that. And number two, I don't know if you ever thought about this, but I was thinking about it today. They had hats with buckles. I've never understood why that happened. I like to imagine that their hats were just falling off and blowing away so much they had to have an emergency meeting. And one guy stood up and was like, I don't know, Jedediah, let's put buckles on them. Get a real tight around the skull. That'll be comfortable. So I guess the upshot of that is if you can find nothing else to be thankful for this week, be thankful you don't live in pilgrim pugs. But seriously, it's interesting to think about Thanksgiving through the lens of gratitude, because somewhere along the way, we kind of lost this entire holiday as it got enveloped by the materialism and commercialization of Christmas. Like, instead of sitting around a table together, being intentional about remembering all the things we're grateful for, all the stuff we've got, so many of us are going to sit around tables together looking at ads for all the things we don't got. The newer, bigger, better, shinier stuff that we don't really need but really want, so we've convinced ourselves we really deserve. And there's a direct link, you guys, between our level of satisfaction with the things God has given us and our willingness to live a Beyond Me lifestyle, to give our time and our abilities and our resources away for the sake of other people in a way that makes an impact and a difference. I think one of the greatest inhibitors to impact in our lives is ingratitude. Because it causes our focus to just shift inwards, and when we're looking inwards, we miss all of the opportunities that surround us every single day. And we've all been there. We've all suffered from this. And how many of you have ever been accused of being ungrateful? So just wait up. I don't want to make you raise your hands for that. That could be awkward. I don't want to put you on the spot. Let me rephrase that question. By a show of hands, how many of you have ever been 8 years old? Yeah, all right, cool. This is a universal condition that we struggle with. And so what I want to do this morning is not beat us up over that. Because, like,
being entitled is part of being human and it's part of being alive. But it's limiting and it's destructive. And so today what we're going to do is take a look at a story from the life of Jesus that gives us a really cool picture of the beauty that gratitude can unleash in our souls and in our world. So if you got a Bible or a Bible with you, you can crack it open to the book of Luke, chapter 7. If you hit Mark, keep going. If you hit John, go back. If you don't have a Bible, no worries. The words are going to be up on the screen. And if you don't own one, please grab one from the Next Steps table before you go. They're free. They're a gift to you. We love them. They disappear. But Luke 7, we're going to pick up the story of verse 36, and this is what's going down. Jesus has been invited to go have dinner at the house of a Pharisee named Simon, which is pretty surprising if you've been following along with the story up to this point, because the Pharisees were these religious and political elites who hated Jesus' guts. Because he had this thing where he kept telling them that following God is not about like checking off the boxes and earning your own salvation. It's about accepting this free gift and allowing him to transform you from the inside out. But the Pharisees were really self-righteous box checkers, so they didn't want to hear that. But Jesus is a pretty captivating guy, so Simon invites him over for dinner to ask him some questions and learn a little bit more about him. This is what goes down in verse 36. It says, but one of the Pharisees, Simon, invited Jesus to have dinner with him. He went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. It's a pretty innocuous sentence, right? Jesus accepts a dinner invite, he goes, he sits around the table like everyone else. And if we didn't know any better, we wouldn't realize there's something missing here. Some details. And as we read on in the story, we figure out that they're not just details Luke forgot to write down. It's something that didn't happen, and it's kind of a big deal that it didn't happen. See, in the first century, when someone came over to your house for dinner, especially if that person was an honored guest, there were three things that you'd do for them. First, you'd give them water to wash off their feet, because back then, everybody wore, like, the Jesus scrappy sandals, and there were no paved roads, and the unpaved roads were full of dirt and mud and a whole lot of animal poop. So your feet got pretty nasty, and you don't eat dinner with gross feet. So you give them water, wash off your feet. The second thing you do is give them oil to put on their heads and faces. I have no idea why, but that's what they would do. And the third thing you do is greet them with a kiss. And in the spirit of Thanksgiving, when we're talking about gratitude, I'd just like to say, for the record, I'm pretty glad that our culture has dropped that one. Like, I can live without kiss greetings. So, but that's what they did. And Simon did none of those things for Jesus. And culturally, that wasn't like a slap in the face type of an insult, but it was a power play. It was Simon's way of communicating to Jesus right off the bat that he wanted to learn about Jesus, but not from Jesus. He didn't quite consider Jesus his equal. And Jesus is chill about that, because he's Jesus. He already knew that's what was going to happen before he showed up and Simon tried to insult him like that. So he just sits down around the table, and then something goes down that shifts everybody's paradigm. This is what it says. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. First things first, it says she lived a sinful life. Haven't we all? But this phrase here is actually a euphemism that indicates she was a prostitute. This is a woman on the absolute lowest rung of the Jewish social and religious ladder. Like, given the life that she lived, she didn't have any business being anywhere near this dinner party. And yet she showed up, and not only showed up, interrupted the entire conversation. Started, like, bawling her eyes out on Jesus' feet and poured this expensive perfume on them. And this is washing his dirty, filthy feet with her hair. Let's have an honest moment. That's weird. That's a weird thing to do, to rub your hair on some random guy's dirty feet. Like, that's, and it was not less weird 2,000 years ago. In fact, it was probably more weird, because in their culture, women were not allowed to touch men in public. And so this thing that is going down, that everyone around the table is watching, is absolutely shocking. Nobody can believe what they're seeing, and Jesus is just letting it happen. Which for Simon confirms everything he wanted to know about Jesus when he invited him over for dinner. Verse 39 says, when Simon saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is. She is a sinner. He's going, I wanted to figure out if this Jesus guy was for real, so I invited him over. And now I know that he's a fake. Because if he was a real prophet, then A, he would know what kind of dirty, gross, no good, awful person is touching him. And B, if he knew that, if he knew who she was, he would be screaming at her to get away from him as soon as possible. And Jesus reads his thoughts here, and he turns the tables on him in a brilliant way. And in the process, he gives us a bigger, better picture of what gratitude can look like, is supposed to look like in our world. He looks him straight in the eye and says, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two people owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii. And a denarius was one day's wages. So this is a lot. Year and a half plus of wages. The other, 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he forgave the debts of both. Now which of them will love him more?" And right now Simon is stuck. He invited Jesus over to prove to all of his buddies that he's better and smarter than Jesus. And now Jesus just backed him into a corner. There's only one answer he can give to this question without looking like an idiot. But he's been around long enough to know that as soon as he gives that answer, Jesus is going to say something else that makes him look like an idiot. But what can he do? So he kind of reluctantly answers. You can hear it in his voice. It's like, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven?" And Jesus looks at him and says, "You have judged correctly. Way to go, little buddy." And then he shows us what gratitude looks like. He illustrates how we should approach God and in turn the world around us. He points at the woman. He says to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins, her so many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little." This is so cool and profound. Jesus looks right at this guy who thinks that he's got it all figured out. Life and faith and religion. And he says, "Nah, man. You don't have it figured out. This woman who you think is so messed up, who you think is beneath you in every single way, she gets it on a level that you clearly don't understand." This radical display of thankfulness that she just put on in front of everybody demonstrates that she understands just how broken, just how lost, just how messed up she was without me, and just how huge my love and forgiveness are. She has been forgiven much. And what she just did, that's what people who have been forgiven much do. But those who have been forgiven little love little. And the implication Jesus is making here isn't that Simon has less to be forgiven for than the woman, because he's like some holy religious dude. It's that Simon foolishly thinks he has less to be forgiven for than this woman. He thinks he needs Jesus less. He thinks he has earn his righteousness by the deeds that he's done. He thinks he deserves salvation. So he's ungrateful. Because I read this story and I can't help but feel like it's so easy, at least for me, to live life a whole lot more like Simon than like the woman. To just be self-righteous and entitled in life of faith. To let our gratitude shrivel up inside of us and atrophy from a lack of use, because we're so convinced of our own worthiness that we don't have any space left inside us for thankfulness. And that's tragic. It robs us of beauty. It limits the impact that we're able to make, and it cuts us off from healthy relationships with God and with other people. And so this morning, I want to draw out four things I think we can learn about what an attitude of gratitude looks like from this incredible woman and her interaction with Jesus. The first one is this: gratitude is unlocked by grace. Gratitude is unlocked by grace. Jesus said it. When you're forgiven little, you love little. But when you're forgiven much, when you realize the depth and the breadth of the forgiveness you've received, you love much. Forgiveness and gratitude are intimately tied together, so much so that grace and gratitude have the same etymology. They both come from the same Latin root, gratis. Because when we get caught up believing, right, that we deserve everything we've got, that we've become so awesome at jumping up through all the hoops of religion, that we've kind of earned righteousness and earned salvation, we don't need Jesus, then it's really easy not to be thankful for the salvation we've received. But when we step back and see rightly just this gap that exists between our brokenness and his holiness, it allows us to be wowed and amazed that the God of heaven stepped into our story and gave his life for us. And when that reality, the hugeness, the ridiculousness of that love is the lens through which we see the world, it unlocks gratitude in our lives. Not too long ago, we were coming to the end of a pan of brownies in the Howard House, and Jenny wanted to wash the pan, and so she gave one brownie each to the three kids who were inside the house, and then Jimmy walked in with a friend. She told him, "Jimmy, there's one brownie left, you can split it if you want to." And every parent in here can guess what his response to that was when looking at his brothers and sisters. "Well, they get a whole brownie, I only get half!" So I called him over and choked him a little bit. Just kidding, I've never even considered doing that. I called him over and we did this question and answer. He's become really fond of lately. I said, "Jimmy, come here. What do you deserve?" And he mumbled back to me the answer that I wanted. Nothing. I said, "Oh, so compared to what you deserve, what is half a brownie?" "Half a brownie more than I deserve." I said, "Oh, it feels like you're winning, dude." And then he looked at me and said, "Dad, thank you for being so helpful and wise. And in this moment, my perspective has shifted forever." That, or he rolled his eyes and mumbled whatever. I don't remember which one of those happened. But honestly, sometimes I'm convinced that the difference between bitterness, the steps that we're owed more than we're getting, the world is holding out on us, and beauty, the sense that life is a gift and there are blessings all around us, is simply a matter of perspective. Okay, when we get to the point where we realize how simple and messed up we were, how epically God loved us to be willing to step out of eternity into history, to be beaten and bloody and bruised and broken and killed for us, when the gospel is the lens through which we see the world and understand our own identity, it changes everything for us. It liberates us from the prison of self-centeredness and entitlement and allows us to look outward in a way that makes a difference for the people our lives are crashing into every day. Second thing I want us to see about gratitude in this story is this: gratitude creates space for growth. We can take a look at this woman's story in Luke 7 and the things that she did and realize her life is never, ever going to be the same. She did what she did because Jesus radically transformed her. He set her on a new path forward in a different direction. Listen, that doesn't mean she doesn't still have some pain in her life. And she doesn't still have some scars that she's dealing with. She's poor. She's been used and abused. But here's the thing about gratitude. It allows us to celebrate who we are becoming rather than grumbling about the broken road we had to take to get there. It creates space for growth because it fixes our focus on the future. And this is so cool, but this is an area where modern science is finally catching up with the Bible, helping us to understand that gratitude actually alleviates some of the pain and some of the fear that comes along with being alive. It's easy in the middle of this materialistic culture to be crippled by fear that there's not enough, and I won't have enough, and I can't get enough, and that's overwhelming sometimes. But neurologists have recently discovered that the human brain cannot process fear and thankfulness at the same time. You can be afraid or you can be thankful, but you cannot be both at once. And so gratitude does this thing inside of us that unlocks and unleashes the fullness of the lives we were made for, because it allows us to look at what we have and see it as enough. And not just enough, even more than enough. It allows us to look and move ahead. And when we do that, as we do that, we create a better future for our world. I just think one of the greatest ways to ensure that we never make an impact beyond ourselves is to fail to cultivate gratitude. Because no truth that can help us grow, no truth that can transform us from who we are into who God made us to be, will ever find space in a human soul that is absent of gratitude. It's a mindset that creates space for growth and increases our capacity to see the beauty around us. Third thing I want to see about gratitude in this story is this: gratitude unleashes generosity. We'll look at the story where this poor, broken woman was generous to Jesus in a way that this rich, social, elite, powerful man was not. And for us, when we're ungrateful and entitled, we look at the world through this lens of what's not in my hands, what's not available to me. But when we're thankful, we look at the world through the lens of what I've got. And that changes the way we relate to the people around us. Because here's the thing, ingratitude blinds us. We get so focused on what we want and what we don't have that we can't see what everyone else is giving to us. It cuts us off from the ability to see how radically people are loving us, how hard they're trying, and to feel blessed by the efforts that they're putting in. And maybe you know some people who are blinded like that. The people who never miss an opportunity to tell you how you fell short of their expectations. What you should have done in addition, or what you should have done instead. That is entitlement lived out, and it's relational poison. It's hard to be in relationship with people like that. But let's have an honest moment. We are all people like that sometimes. We all do that to one another. Because we get blinded by our greed and blinded by our selfishness. And when we're focused on our lack, we cannot see other people's love. And we can't see God's love either. Ingratitude blinds us. And when we see things as they are, we allow gratitude to fill us up. It creates space for us to appreciate the love we've received and the people who've given it to us and the God who loved us enough to give his life so we could be forgiven and set free. And when we see that, we're able to release resources. We're able to come to the world around us in need with open hands because we realize that we are continually receiving and so we can continually be giving as well. Gratitude makes us generous. And generosity makes us healthier. This is another area where science is finally catching up with the Bible. A recent study showed that the level of generosity in senior citizens was a better predictor of their health and longevity than the list of medications they were taking. Generosity literally helps us live longer. But more than that, it helps us live better. And generosity starts with thankful hearts. Because gratitude unlocks this ability in us to give. Like an apple a day keeps the doctor away, a thank you a day keeps the cynicism away. Generosity or gratitude is a vitamin that makes us healthy enough to be generous. The last one, last thing I want us to see, and this is the one I think that should be most self-explanatory. It should make the most sense to us, but the reality is I think this is the hardest one to actually live out. And here it is. Gratitude is meant to be given. It's a feeling that's only really useful when it's put into practice. Because it's one thing to feel grateful, but it's another thing to give thanks. Gratitude is what we feel. Thanksgiving is what we do. And the former, without the latter, is kind of empty. The sociologist Brené Brown puts it this way in her book, The Gifts of Imperfection. It seems to me that gratitude without practice may be a little bit like faith without works. It's not alive. And one of the greatest things about the story in Luke 7 is the way that this woman's thankfulness just flows out of her. And she can't keep it inside. She's not even trying to keep it inside. She's been so blessed that she feels like, I got to get this out. I got to let it overflow out of my life and my actions. And the same thing's true for us a couple thousand years later. Real gratitude overflows in our life and our actions. It's expressed in actions and words of thankfulness. It does something inside of us that changes the way we live. If it doesn't, like if our gratitude isn't changing the way we talk and the things that we do and the way that we're living, then it's probably time to have a gut check moment and ask ourselves whether we really are as thankful as we think we are. Because there's probably a whole lot of us in the room who would say that we do not struggle with ingratitude. So no, I'm super thankful for a whole bunch of things. I'm not entitled. That's not a real struggle in my life. But if we're not living it out, if we're not putting it into practice, then is that true? Is it real? Saying things and doing things are completely different. In college, once during fraternity recruitment, we met this guy who said he was a ninja. And we were all looking at each other like, I don't know when a ninja could come in handy, but I think a ninja could probably come in handy around the house. We should sign this guy up. And so we did. We recruited him. We signed him up. And then he joined. And then we're like, all right, do some ninja stuff. And he couldn't even kick his head above his leg. Or, not, that's not what I meant. His leg above his head. Either way! Whatever he got into, it turned out he had just taken karate classes as a kid. I don't know if you guys know this, but that does not make you a ninja. Like, saying it and doing it are not the same thing. I could tell you that I'm a runner, but until the day hell freezes over and I go for a jog, gratitude is real when it's lived out. Because here's the thing, to the people around us, unexpressed gratitude expresses ingratitude. They don't know that we're thankful for them unless we tell them and we show them that we're thankful for them. It's not human to assume, everyone's probably thankful for me. Except for weirdos. They're the only people who do that. So, like for us, even if it's unintentional, to this God who gave us everything, to the people who have given us more than we deserve, who have shown us love, unexpressed gratitude expresses ingratitude. Because we're commanded in the Bible, no less than 38 times, to give thanks. Not feel thankful, but give thanks. Gratitude is a spiritual muscle that's meant to be exercised. And it makes an impact when we do it. So it's Thanksgiving week. This is the one day a year we set aside to get all our thankfulness out, because heaven forbid we got to do it every day. But as we approach this holiday that's about gratitude, I want us to learn from the woman in Luke chapter 7 that gratitude is unlocked by grace. Gratitude creates space for growth. Gratitude unleashes generosity. And gratitude is meant to be given. And I want to challenge everybody in here today to take like one step forward toward cultivating a heart of gratitude in your life. I've been doing something now for a while. Every morning I sit down and I write down three things that I'm thankful for. Which has been kind of intense. I'm not as good at it as I thought I would be. It's kind of humbling. Like, oh, great, I haven't been titled in my brain. I'm like, woo-hoo. But it's been really healthy for me to do. And some mornings I write down stuff like, I'm thankful for the gift of marriage. Just the grace of being loved despite my many, many flaws. The chance to be challenged to be better and love more self-sacrificially. And to like walk forward in life hand in hand with another person. And some mornings I write down stuff like, tacos. I love tacos. For what it's worth, I wish we ate tacos instead of Thanksgiving, or instead of turkey on Thanksgiving. I'm not even sorry that I said that. If you're offended by it, tough luck. It's true. Tacos are better. But it's been cool and healthy. And what I want to do this morning is not like invite you to make that a daily practice. We're all busy. We got stuff. If you want to make it a daily habit, I recommend trying it. It's really cool. It's been healthy for my heart. But and instead of like trying to do that for the rest of your life, I want to challenge you this Thanksgiving week to write down five things that you're thankful for. Think of five things that you're thankful for. Don't just leave them in your mind. Write them down. And then take at least two of those things and express gratitude. Say thank you to somebody. Whether it's with words or a card or a gift or an action. Like express gratitude to two of the people that have made some of those five things happen. I know for some of us, that's intimidating. It's just not something we've done a whole lot. And so if, like, I'll still give you an A on the project if one of them is God. He deserves it. So you can pray and thank God for all that he's given you. But I dare you this week. I dare you to sit down and write down five things you're thankful for and express gratitude to at least two people. Because I think you will find transformation when you do. It'll change you and it will change them. Because when we're grateful, we are most fully alive. Thankful hearts and thankful attitudes create space for us to enjoy everything that comes our way, to see all of life as a gift from a generous and abundant giver to whom we owe everything. It's the grateful people who suck the marrow out of life. Because when our hearts are full of gratitude, the world around us paints itself in more vivid and beautiful colors than that. You guys, then we're set free to live beyond me lives. We pray. God, thank you. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for forgiveness, which changes everything about our world. Everything about what we see when we look in the mirror. Everything about what we do as we relate to the people around us. We're just so grateful for who you are, for the love you've given us. And we pray that you do a thing in our hearts. God, in a world of entitlement and greed and selfishness and self-righteousness, we'd be able to step back and realize just how huge the gift of your love is. Just how much we've received from you. And we'd walk out of here today with thankful hearts, as grateful people, more full, more happy, more healthy, more ready to live beyond ourselves, to release the resources that have been placed in our hands for the sake of the people around us. Thank you, God. Create hearts of gratitude in us.